Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the Air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater Program 338 in the series. It's November 24th, and to my right is the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl?
And we have Shante Garth, our producer, in the booth, and we have a big shoe for you this evening. We have three classic radio shows, including the Jack Benny Program. Everybody loves Jack Benny. And then it's Big Town, starring Edward Pauly. And then David Harding, Counter Spy, starring Don McLaughlin. Three radio shows coming your way. But first, Lisa, we are going to play our game, Cat's Pride. Is it real or is it ridiculous?
Yes, we
sound
are.
Sound good?
It sounds good. The celebrity is going to be Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins.
And the prize will be a certificate for a desktop artificial tree from Tree Time Christmas Creation.
It's not fava beans?
No, not this time.
Not any fava beans.
No.
Okay. All right. So what caller would you
We're
like?
We're going to go with caller four.
Caller four. Call us now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll play the game live right after these words.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
And we have Tim on the line to play. Hey, Tim.
Hey, morning, guys.
How are you? Well, it's not morning yet,
morning,
but it's
evening.
Almost
sorry,
morning. We're almost. So close to the morning.
Ready for? I don't even know what day it is with the holidays. So
you know what? Yeah, we're feeling the same way here. It's Saturday night. We're going to play a little Real or Ridiculous. The celebrity's Anthony Hopkins. Here we go. Number one, Anthony Hopkins is an expert juggler.
Oh, that's a tough one. I'll say ridiculous.
I'm going to agree with Tim. He doesn't seem that coordinated.
Who, Tim?
No, Tim seems coordinated.
Well, he's right about that.
You were both right. That is ridiculous.
Hey, Tim, just for the record, I haven't missed one of these since the first time
know,
we did it.
You know that? I listen every week.
Thank
you.
I appreciate
right,
that.
Carl,
I'm on a roll, buddy.
I'm glad you told us that. Now we feel good. Number two.
Made me feel good, too.
I know. Anthony Hopkins modeled for a December issue of GQ in 1955.
When was he? I'm trying to think. First movies he would have been. Time-wise, maybe if he was really young. I'll say real to that.
No.
But I don't know if GQ was even around back then.
I don't think it was even around back in 55. And he would have been like 11 years old or something like
no,
that.
No, he wouldn't have been.
I'll go with Carl.
All right. It's ridiculous, but the date was possible. Because he was born, I don't know, I don't remember.
Tim made the smart move and came to my side. Yep.
Well, I don't know, I'd already heard the other one.
So we're right.
All right, well, if you pick one and then the other, you're kind of right
like
no matter what
major,
you do.
I'm on a major role here.
Anthony Hopkins was knighted by the Queen for his contributions to the arts.
Okay, but he wasn't a GQ model in 55.
He was not.
All right, what's the
or
last
in any
one?
Other year. I just said it. Okay, Tim, Carl
knighted,
wasn't listening.
Oh.
I guess I might say real, but...
What was
I'm
the
not,
question?
I'm not sure if he's a British citizen, so...
What was it again?
Carl, I'm talking to Tim right now. Tim, what do you think? Really?
Wait
ridiculous?
A minute. I got to hear the question.
I'll say it again.
All right, come on.
Anthony Hopkins was knighted by the Queen for his contributions to the arts.
Yes, he was.
I was talking to Tim, though.
I was going to say real, but I wasn't sure if he was actually a British citizen. Which
all right, are we going to go with real?
Yeah.
I say real,
okay, it is real.
Jeez, I'm good at this
so,
game.
So, Carl, wow, you're so good.
Tim is good,
Tim,
too.
Tim, you're so good, because Tim's the winner, not you, Carl.
Man.
And, Tim, you've won a certificate for a desktop pre-lit sports-themed artificial tree from Tree Time Christmas Creations on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington.
Tim's going to put an ornament on there that says Carl.
Wait a second. It's featuring the most ginormous selection of artificial Christmas trees.
I'm ginormous. I'm 6 foot now.
And
that
unique
I had my
decorations
limb
anywhere.
Lengthening surgery.
But in order to win, you have to sing the Tree Time jingle.
TreeTime.com. Everything Christmas. TreeTime.com.
Okay, you didn't have to, but yeah. I'm so impressed. I knew you could do it. Thank you so much for calling. You're definitely a double triple winner.
Okay.
Way to go,
thank
buddy.
Thank you, Tim.
Great job, Tim. All right. And, folks, we have a text in line. It is 312-981-7200. Did you have a nap today earlier, Lisa?
No.
Lisa did not have a nap, folks.
I'm good, though.
You
I'm
know
all
what that
good.
Means. We need you to text in because she will be sleeping by about 12:05 if you don't
text in. I'll be
text
up that
in.
Long, huh?
Yeah, you'll make it to 12:05.
I'll make it to midnight. That
just
about.
Pure adrenaline will get you to 12:05.
Okay.
All right, well, it's time now for Jack Benny, my favorite comedian of the golden age of radio, many people's favorites. This is a broadcast from May 20th, 1951. The cast is very unhappy with their new contracts. Very funny show. Here's part one of the Jack Benny program.
The Jack Benny program, transcribed. In just a half hour, Jack Benny will do his television show. But right now, it's time for his radio program. With Barry Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, I would like to pay tribute to a man who, for the past 37 weeks... has brought joy and happiness into millions of American homes.
Don't forget the 569,000 trailers, too.
A man whose wit, charm, and personality have endeared him to the hearts of his public.
Keep going, Don. We have a half hour.
A man who every year at this time picks up our options, and here he is, Jack Benny!
Thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, since you brought the matter up, I suppose you received the contract I mailed you for next season.
Yes, I did, Jack, and I'm not quite satisfied with some of the clauses.
Huh?
After serving you faithfully for 17 years, I'm surprised that you had the effrontery to present me with a contract that was not only insulting, but relegates me to a position that no self-respecting man would accept.
Well... And just what is your complaint, Mr. Wilson?
Well, now, here's the situation, Jack. You get a lot of laughs at the expense of my being fat.
Uh-huh.
And this year, my weekly salary has been at the rate of $2 a pound.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's only fair that next year I get $3 a pound.
$3 a pound, huh? Don, I wouldn't give you $3 a pound if all your fat was trimmed off and you were hanging on a hook. The raise I offered you is as high as I can go. Now, what do you say?
I can't sign the contract now, Jack. I'll have to talk it over with the little woman.
Oh, you and the little woman. Haven't you got a mind of your own?
Yes, but I respect my wife's opinion. I'm very devoted to her.
I see.
After all, I'm home with her every day except Sunday.
Well, I can fix that, too. Now, look, Don, I've been very fair about this whole thing, and I... Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack. What are you talking about?
Oh, Don isn't satisfied with his new contract for next season.
He isn't?
No.
Oh, my goodness, and after all you've done for him.
Well, that's the way it goes, Mary. There isn't much gratitude in this business.
Why, Don Wilson, you ought to be ashamed.
Never mind, Mary, never mind. Thanks, just the same. By the way, have you read your new contract?
Yeah. What are you trying to do, bring back slavery?
Oh, so I'm going to have trouble with you, too. Now, what's wrong with your contract?
I don't like Clause 7.
Clause 7? Oh, Mary, it only happens around Thanksgiving.
I don't care. If you buy a turkey, kill it yourself.
Mary, can I help it if I'm sentimental?
You're not sentimental. When you pay for a whole turkey, you hate to chop anything off.
Oh, stop.
Sentimental. You even use the head for badminton.
I stopped doing that. I couldn't stand the way it came over the net, staring at me.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mary, you got a lot of nerve complaining about your contract. After all...
Hiya, Jackson. Hiya, Don. Hey, Livy.
Hello, Phil.
Hey, Phil, it's about time you got here. What made you late?
Well, it ain't my fault, Jackson. I had plenty of time to get here, but just as I left the house, Alice fainted.
Oh, my goodness. That must have scared you to death.
No, no. It happens every time I kiss her goodbye.
Oh, brother.
That's what she said as she hit the floor.
Phil, do you really have that effect on Alice?
Jackson, she won't even let me shave with a mirror. She don't want my love divided.
Phil, if I paid you by the pound, your head would ruin me. Now, look, Dennis isn't here yet to sing a song, so pick up your baton. Let's have a band.
Jackson, I ain't making with that downbeat till I talk to you about that new contract you sent me. My lawyers don't like it.
Your lawyers? Who are they?
Kirchy, Kimmick, Fletcher, and Fink.
Well, Phil, just what is it you and your lawyers object to in the contract?
We don't like the clause that says I got to get to bed on Saturday night before 3 a.m.
Well, it's for your own good, Phil. After all, you have a program to do on Sunday. I want you to look bright and fresh.
I know, but if I lose that red glow in my eyes, I ain't got no personality.
Phil, I've been playing badminton with a turkey head for 2 years, and it looks better than you do. Gee, the way I shouted that gag, it should have got a bigger laugh, don't you think? Anyway, I'll talk to your lawyers about your contract later, but right now, let's have a band number.
Okay, Jackson, what would you like to hear?
Guy Lombardo, but I'm stuck with you. Now, go ahead, play anything.
Okay, okay.
Hey, wait a minute, Phil, hold it. The quartet just came in, and we can have the commercial now. Don, what song are the boys going to do?
Well, they prepared a number from Guys and Dolls called If I Were a Bell.
Oh, you mean the one that goes, ask me how do I feel, ask me now that we're cozy and clinging. Well, sir, all I can say is if I were a bell, I'd be ringing. I love that. That's a wonderful number, you know.
Well, Jack, they rehearsed it, but I don't think they're going to sing it.
Why not?
They're not too happy about the new contract you sent them, and 5 years with you, and you won't even give them a raise.
Well, Don, whether they like their contract or not, they're still working for me, and I want their number right now.
All right, but they're still mad at you.
Well, isn't that exasperating? Tell him to sing. Tell him to sing, and I don't want to hear any more about it.
Okay, fellas, you better do it.
Well, I'll say they better. All right.
Ask us how do we feel. Ask us now that we're working for Benny. Well, sir, all we can say is we can't save a dime or a penny. We had trouble you won't believe since we carried this heavier load. Boy, if we were a tree, we'd leave. Or if we were a bomb, we'd explode. Ask us how do we belittle us with our quiet upbringing. With no future in sight, there's no reason for us to keep singing. Boy, we really believe that Jack must be the thing. Oh, if we were a gun, we'd go bang, bang, bing, bang, bing.
That was If I Were a Bell, sung by the Sports Madmen Quartet, and accompanied by Phil Harris and the sweetest music this side of Spike Jones. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Hey, wait a minute.
Huh?
Look, all year you've been picking on me and my musicians. Why don't you leave the boys alone just once? Especially on this of all days.
Well, what's so special about today, Phil?
It's Petrillo's birthday.
Petrillo's birthday?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Caesar. Happy birthday to you.
Aw, isn't that sweet? Phil, believe me, I don't enjoy insulting your boys, but look at them. No jackets, no ties, collars open. What a way to come to a broadcast.
But Jackson, it's the middle of May. The weather's hot. They're just trying to keep cool.
Trying to keep cool, eh? Then why is Bagby, your piano player, wearing gloves?
Because he don't want to leave his fingerprints on nothing.
Well, Phil, if they haven't caught him by now, he's safe. Believe me. So will you do me the courtesy, Phil, of asking Sir Charles Bagby to remove his gloves when your band accompanies Dennis Day in his song?
Say, Jack, where is Dennis?
I don't know, but I hope he gets here pretty soon. I want to talk to him about his new contract for next year.
A new contract for Dennis? I thought you had him signed up till he just fades away.
Well, I have, Mary, but I added some new clauses.
Hey, Livy, you should have seen the clause he sneaked into my contract.
Never mind.
What was it, Phil?
If I ever find a dime before I can spend it, I gotta call Jackson and find out if he lost one.
Phil, I just did that for a gag. Where's your sense of humor? Hey, maybe that's Dennis. I'll get it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
All right, right there on that applause. We will take a break here on the WGN Radio Theater from the Jack Benny program from 1951. The gang just is not happy with their contracts, just like I know you weren't happy with the contract I gave you this year. But you'll get a new one in 2019.
I'm still waiting for a new one. Approved
I gave you an
contract.
Invisible contract.
Well, I'd like an improved one, please. I'm going to work toward that.
You know what I do? I'll do it in... ink that disappears. What is that? Disappearing ink.
Ink that disappears.
Disappearing ink. That $1 million.
It doesn't matter because I will take you on your word.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My word's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good.
Pretty
is the key word there.
All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Pam. It is 11:35 here on a Saturday evening, soon to be Sunday morning. We are playing all your favorite classic radio shows. We do this every Saturday and Sunday beginning at 11 p.m. Lisa Wolf and I, we drive here. We get in our cars. We drive to the studio. Actually, we carpool. We meet halfway, and we carpool here, and Lisa's getting a lot better. She's not as crazy like, Carl, whenever there's... You've been a lot better lately.
Well, okay, right? You're
at
actually...
At first, you were horrible.
Well, you I'm were a horrible person.
No, I mean, to be... She's a terrible passenger. Terrible. But she's much better lately.
How are you at being a passenger, Carl?
Terrible. Oh,
okay. I don't like driving that
much
with other people.
I don't...
Do well
I don't
way.
Do that. I have to be driving.
I'm really more...
Cannot be a passenger.
That's what I'm saying. And for those of you who want to know, just to confirm, we are here all 3 hours tonight from 11 to 2. No preemption tonight.
Right. So we're here every Saturday and Sunday. We play five classic radio shows for you every weekend. And if there's anything you want us to play, just text us, 312-981-7200. We love getting your texts. And Lisa has not yawned, not even once.
No, wide awake.
Curtis, she hasn't yawned not even one time.
Nope.
So
somebody around
I'm keeping
here
an eye
has
on
to
her,
stay
though.
Awake.
Keeping an eye on her. All right, we're listening to Jack Benny from, let's see, May 20th, 1951. The cast is very unhappy with their new contracts. Here's the conclusion of the Jack Benny program.
Hello, Rochester. What do you want?
I've been listening to the program, boss, and it occurred to me that we haven't discussed my contract yet.
Well, Rochester, you've been working in my house for 14 years, and I feel that there's no necessity for a written contract.
Uh-huh.
Now, everything is perfectly clear, and we have what is known as a verbal agreement.
Uh-huh.
Now, that means we have a mutual understanding. Why put things on paper? The amount of money involved is too small.
That's what I mean. Let's blow it up a little.
You'll be taken care of. And believe me, Rochester, there's no necessity for a written contract.
But my attorney's advised it, whereas and to wit.
Your attorneys, who are they?
Remus, Bemis, Calloway, and Smythe.
Oh, well, tell Remus, Bemis, Calloway, and Smythe to get in touch with Kirchie, Kimmick, Fletcher, and Fink. Let them handle it.
It's the same firm. They've got a brand Hedge on Central Avenue.
Oh, well, anyway, Rochester, you've got nothing to worry about. I'm giving you a substantial raise next year.
Substantial?
Yes, you know what the word means, don't you?
I ain't illiterate, I'm skeptical.
Well, you're getting it, so don't let it bother you. I'll see you later. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, say, boss.
Now what?
Are you still going to have company for dinner tomorrow night?
Oh, yes, I'm glad you remind me, Rochester. You better run down to the store and get a leg of lamb.
A leg of lamb? Why don't you get a turkey?
Why?
After dinner, they might want to play badminton.
No, just get a leg of lamb and a small squab. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
See, I don't know what Rochester's worried about. I've always taken good care of him.
Oh, hello, everybody.
Hello, Dennis.
Hi, kid.
Dennis, how come you're so late?
Well, I was out in the hall reading my contract with the new clauses in it.
Oh, then you got the contract.
Yeah, this is one Irishman who ain't smiling.
All right, Dennis, what's wrong with it?
A lot of things, but especially Clause G.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Dennis, you don't have to worry about Clause G until you're 65.
I know, but why should I give you 10% of my Social Security?
Because I'll be 72 then, and I'll need it. That's why.
Jack, I can't understand you. You've got a ridiculous clause in my contract, too.
What's he got in yours, Liv?
If my sister Babe ever gets married, she has to buy the ring from him.
Mary, if your sister Babe ever finds a man who will marry her, not only will I give her the ring free, but I'll play Oh Promise Me at the wedding. I'm sure that...
I'll get it. Hello? Yeah, this is Phil. How are you, kid? Huh? Oh, just a second, I'll ask you. Hey, Jackson, it's Kenny Baker.
Kenny Baker? What does he want?
He found a dime. Can he spend it?
Now, cut that off. There was no one on the phone. You and that smart Alex sound man. Now, look, Dennis. You came in late, but we won't discuss that now. Just sing your song.
I'm not going to sing till I get a better contract.
What's the matter with everybody? The quartet didn't want to sing. You don't want to sing? What's gotten into you?
I know my rights. I've been speaking to my lawyers.
Your lawyers? Who are they?
Beagle, bagel, cream cheese, and lox.
Beagle, bagel, cream cheese. Beagle, bagel, cream cheese, and lox.
Beagle has a hole in his head.
That does it. Dennis, I've given you your chance. I'll get somebody else to sing.
Oh, that's what you think. You can't get anyone else to sing on such short notice.
Never mind that. Say, Phil.
Won't you come with me to Alabama? Let's go.
I don't want to.
Now, Bob Crosby's rehearsing down the hall. Go over and get him.
Gladly, Jackson. Gladly.
On second thought, maybe Mary better go. You might run into an old corkscrew, you know. Mary, would you mind going? Bob Crosby is in Studio B.
Oh, sure, Jack. Gosh, CBS is crowded on Sundays. Hello, Amos. Hello, Andy. Oh, hello, Gracie. Hello, George. Hello, Edgar. Hello, Charlie. Hello, Fibber. Hello, Molly. Whoops, must have walked too far. Maybe they're just visiting some friends here. Oh, here's Studio B. I think this is where the Campbell Soup program is rehearsing. Oh, there's Bob out on the stage.
All right, fellas, let's go through that number once more. Here we go, fellas.
Because of you, there's a song in my heart. Because of you, my romance had its start. Because of you, the sun will shine. The stars and moon will say you're mine. Forever and never to part. I only live for your love and your kiss. It's paradise to be near you like this. Because of you, my life is now worthwhile, and I can smile because of you. I only live for your love and your kiss. It's paradise to be near you like this. Because of you, my life is now worthwhile, and I can smile because of you.
That was wonderful, fellas. You can take five now. Take a break, huh?
Oh, Bob.
Oh, hello, Mary.
Gee, Bob, that was a beautiful song.
Well, thank you.
You know, it's amazing. I closed my eyes when you sang, and you sounded exactly like America's number one crooner.
No kidding? Did I sound that much like Gary?
Bob, if you've got a minute, Jack would like you to step over to our studio.
You know, that's a coincidence. I was just going over to see him myself. You know, I'm a little peeved at him. You know he's making it hard for me to sing?
Well, I don't understand. How can Jack make it hard for you to sing?
Well, I can't hit the high notes anymore. He puts too much starch in my collars.
Oh. Well, that's Rochester's fault. Jack's the rough, dry man. Anyway, Bob, he'd like to have you sing a song on his program.
Today?
Yeah, right now.
Okay. Say, fellas, I'll be back in a few minutes.
Jack's studio is right down the hall, Bob.
I know, but just a second. I've got to do something.
Bob, you punch a time clock?
Brother Everett makes me.
Oh, well, let's go. Gee, it must be kind of embarrassing having to punch a time clock.
Yeah, Brother Everett's always pushing us around. You know, sometime I'd like to get even with him.
Oh, we shouldn't complain about relatives because... Say, I just got an idea. Is Everett married?
No, why?
Well, I have a sister who's single, too.
Look, Mary, I just want to get even. I don't want to get ahead of you.
Well, here we are.
And furthermore, Dennis, I think you should know that... Oh, hello, Bob.
Hello, Jack. Did you want to see me?
Yes, come right in. By the way, do you know any of my gang?
Why, sure. Where's Don Wilson?
Any place you look.
Hello, Bob.
Hiya, Rob.
Hiya, Phil. Say, did you pay your respects?
Yes. My boy sang it a few moments ago.
And Bob, this is Dennis Day.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, Dennis.
I've got two shows. What do you got?
Well, I've got three brothers, Larry, Everett, and Daddy Warbucks.
Hey, that's pretty funny.
Jack, what's bothering Clancy here?
Don't mind him, Bob. He's just jealous because I want you to sing a song on my show.
Sing? Well, I don't know, Jack.
Oh, it's strictly business, Bob. I intend to pay you.
Oh?
Now, how much do you get for singing a song on the radio?
$3,000.
Bob, I'm going to ask you that question again, and this time, don't ad-lib.
Well, I'm not ad-libbing. That's my price, $3,000.
Gee.
Well, all good singers get that much.
Where? Who? When? Where?
Fellas, sit down. Sit down.
Well, Jack, do you want me to sing or not?
What'd you say, Bob?
You want me to sing or not?
Now, don't be hasty, Bob. Now, for $3,000, you sing both the verse and the chorus of a song, don't you?
That's right.
Now, Bob, most people don't know the verse anyway. What would you charge for just a chorus?
$2,000.
Well, we wouldn't need a whole chorus. You see, the Sportsman Quartet just sang. Now, how much would you charge for, say, 16 bars?
$1,500.
Gee, that's almost $100 a bar.
And they're worth it, Dad.
You keep out of this. Bob, can't you give me something a little less expensive?
Well, for $10, I can crack my knuckles in C sharp.
Look, I'll tell the jokes, you see. Right now, we're discussing business. Anyway, Bob, we shouldn't haggle about prices in front of the audience. It makes you look cheap. I'll sing your song, and I'll give you $500.
Not me, Jack.
But, Bob, it's silly for two old friends to argue like this. Go ahead and sing. We can settle it later in court, you know? Go ahead.
All right. I'll go get my musicians to accompany me.
Now, wait a minute, little brother.
Yeah?
What's the matter with my boys?
Your boys?
Yeah, they're just waiting for the downbeat.
Phil, I don't want to insult your boys on this, of old days. But I wouldn't let your band accompany me if I were blowing a safe.
Now, just a minute, chicken gumbo. There's nothing wrong with my musicians.
Oh, no?
No.
Hit him, Phil.
Dennis, be quiet.
You got a lot of nerve, Crosby, coming over to make trouble.
I was asked to come over here.
Who asked you?
You did.
Oh, yes. Now, look, Bob, I'll give you the money you want, but for that, you'll also have to appear on my television show.
Well, I'd love to do that, Jack. When does your television show go on?
In just about 3 minutes.
3 minutes?
Yes. And if you'll excuse me, I got to rush over and put on my makeup. See you later, Bob.
Say, Mary, besides Jack and me, who else is going to be on the television show?
Well, I'm going to be on it in Rochester, and the greatest golfer in the world, Ben Hogan.
No, Ben?
Yes, Bob, and it's a real cute show. This is the way it's going to open. The first scene is in Jack's house in Beverly Hills. It's early in the afternoon. A lot of things happen, and then I come in to pick up Jack, and we go to the country club. That's where we meet you and Ben Hogan, and we all go out and play golf.
Ladies and gentlemen, each year forest fires destroy 30 million acres of timberland. Timberland that is vitally needed to keep our country strong and to raise our production higher than ever before. Most of these fires started because someone was careless. Don't leave campfires burning. Never drop lighted matches or cigarettes. Put them out. Remember, only you can prevent forest fires. Thank you.
Now, Rochester, hurry and finish making me up. My television show goes on in 30 seconds.
I am, boss. Hold still. I gotta put on a little more makeup. A little more. There may be a lot of close-ups, so I want to cover up all the wrinkles. Yeah, that ought to do it.
Is it dry?
Yeah, but don't smile. Your face will crack like a sidewalk.
I won't. Oh, darn it, I smiled. Good night, folks.
Be sure to hear Dennis Day and the Day in the Life of Dennis Day. Bob Crosby, yes. And Baird on Club 15 over this CBS network. The Jack Benny program is heard by our armed forces overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Transcribed, this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right, that's the Jack Benny program from May 20th, 1951. Cast very unhappy with their new contracts. Funny show. Phil Harris on that, Rochester, Dennis Day, Mary Livingston, Don Wilson, and, of course, Jack Benny. And that was originally sponsored by Lucky Strike, but we removed all of the Lucky Strike commercials because you can't air cigarette commercials on the radio. You know that,
you
Lisa?
You can't, and we don't want to.
No.
So
absolutely not. No. You know, I have been working very diligently on the Classic Radio Club for all of our listeners. We have hundreds of people that have signed up to the Classic Radio Club. And folks, if you don't know about it, you should check out our website, classicradioclub.com, because when you join the club, you'll get 10 of the greatest classic radio shows of all time on 5 CDs in a collector case for an introductory offer of only $4.99. So $5 and shipping and handling. And you will get 5 CDs with 10 of the greatest shows of all time, including the Who's On First with Abbott and Costello. You have Suspense, Gunsmoke, all kinds of fun shows on there. And then you will get another 5 CDs every month with 10 more shows for a little bit more money, $14.99, $10 more. But you can cancel at any time, and I promise you, you're going to get the greatest radio shows from my library of over 100,000 shows. Now, Lisa's a member, and not only do you get your collection every month, and then you listen to the shows, but then you give it to your mom and dad, right?
Yeah, Lisa? We can share it. I'm sort of waiting because I want to build up my collection to be as large as yours.
Yeah.
So if I stay in the club long enough,
let me think.
I will grow my collection
1,600 years, 100,000 something like that.
Classic radio shows.
Yeah, 1,600 years, and
so
you can build it.
I'm on it.
Yeah, but the quality is amazing of all of these shows. I'm picking the best shows for you. Plus, I'm writing copious liner notes and fun facts on every show. You get all of this sent to your home in a surprise box of CDs every single month. Just go to classicradioclub.com. All right, more of the WGN Radio Theater after these words. So, Lisa, you didn't have any turkey for Thanksgiving? You don't eat turkey, huh?
I don't.
You don't know what you're missing.
Oh, I do. I've had it in my earlier years. I know what it tastes like.
It's so good. You know,
yeah, I just can't do it anymore.
I went over to, my son and I went and ate turkey by my sisters, and my mom was there, and she made the most amazing turkey and all the trimmings,
she's
right?
She's a really good
cook. She's an awesome cook, my sister, Carlene. And I had like, I don't know, 3-4 pieces of turkey, and then when I was done, I fell asleep. I was like out.
You know,
for like an hour, I was
well,
out.
Well, I think you would have done that with or without the turkey. It's
no,
kind of
the
an old
turkey
man
with
thing.
The tryptophan
in
there.
Asleep.
That tryptophan really.
If you had pizza, would you have fallen asleep afterwards?
No,
I think
no.
You would have.
But man, that it's so great.
Okay, so my mom is doing a Thanksgiving in Florida in December because they weren't here for Thanksgiving.
Right, and you're not going to eat turkey there
no,
either.
No, but I buy this tofurkey thing.
What?
Yeah, tofurkey turkey.
Tofurkey.
I'm sure people know what I'm talking
about.
It's
turkey made out of tofu?
It looks like turkey, but it's not, obviously. It's protein, and it's got stuffing and gravy. It's a whole thing. You can get it at Whole Foods. I'm on it. And I'm all excited. No, that's good. No, it's delicious.
It's wonderful.
Well, you know.
It sounds so delicious.
Some people like to support others
in
their quests.
FedEx me a plate of it, would you?
That's way too expensive.
Yeah.
You give me your credit card number, I'll send
Pam,
it right over.
Pam, do you hear what Lisa is going to make? Pam, are you listening to what Lisa wants to make for...
I have heard of this thing she's talking about.
I have never tried it, and I've decided I'm going to try it this December. I'm a little late
Pam.
To the game.
Okay. You know, I can
Pam's
do,
with me on this.
Well, you know, I do like turkey. I do partake of the meat.
Yeah, but she's not making noises out of her
soon.
Behind.
I will be not partaking of any of it soon, but it's really good. Now, I do like tofu. I'm a kind of person, like, it has to look and taste. It has to, you know, they have to go together.
It does look like turkey. It's a whole roast, and it's got stuffing in it.
It's kind of pale.
Vegan stuffing.
No. No way.
Well, she's not making weird noises out of her behind like you are, so.
Yeah,
she's
I put the microphone. I turned the microphone around here.
I am down with the tofu thing. I am down with the vegan thing.
For
really
you,
am.
I'll FedEx it. For him, not so much.
Oh, my gosh. All right, in our next hour, Big Town. Don't miss that. And then in our third hour, David Harding, Counter Spy.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Pam. All right, it is 12:09 here on a Sunday morning. Happy Sunday, Lisa, and to all of our listeners. You know what, Lisa, this hour?
Carl.
Big Town, a good newspaper drama, very cool show from 1949, Edward Pauly starring in that. And in that cast, Mason Adams. Now, that's a very famous name from the golden age of radio and early television. He was Charlie Hume on Lou Grant. Remember that show, Lou Grant?
Of course.
Yeah, then he did the Smuckers commercials, and you'll recognize his voice on this Big Town episode coming your way in just a few minutes. But right now it's time to play our Cat's Pride Real or Ridiculous game, which I haven't missed one since the very first time we played this game.
Yeah, you're feeling really good about this game.
Maybe I have your password to your computer and I'm able to look at what this... Maybe I'm doing that. Who
maybe
knows?
Maybe that,
right?
Or maybe you're just feeling really good about
maybe
yourself.
I'm just
and
super,
now we
super
know that.
Good at this game.
You are Could super be. Good at this.
Who's the celebrity?
The celebrity is James Stewart.
James Stewart, yeah. Good old Jimmy
Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart.
And the prize will be a desktop indoor weather station by American Weather Makers.
A desktop calendar?
And, nope, not this time.
And what number?
What number caller?
Yeah, what number
caller? We're going to go with caller 5.
Caller 5. All right,
312-981-7200. Call now, and we'll be right back.
All right, we'll be right back after these words.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
And we have Catherine on the line to play with us. Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
How are you?
Holidays.
Thank you. You too.
Hi, Catherine.
So we're going to play a little Real or Ridiculous, and we're going to add our friend Curtis in. He's a producer for Dave Player, so we all know and love Curtis. He's a great producer. And we're going to go from there. Okay, James Stewart is an acrophobic. Do you know what that is?
He's not good at jumping from one thing to the other.
Yeah, that's it. Or is he afraid of heights is the question.
Oh.
Isn't that's acro. Interesting. Isn't that spiders?
Acrobat.
I think it's ridiculous.
Carl?
What does it mean, though?
Acrophobic is afraid of heights. You're thinking of anacro. Like as Okay, anyway.
I'll go with ridiculous, too.
Okay.
I'm going to go with real.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Let me finish. Wait a second. I just remembered he used to fly bomber jets and stuff. I'm changing it to ridiculous.
Because nope,
I remember he used to be a bomber pilot.
Too much, too little,
no,
too late.
No.
You think that's fair?
Yeah, it's fair.
Okay. Girl, well, you've got it right, Catherine. It is ridiculous. The next one. You got one wrong.
No.
Yes, you did.
Catherine. What do you think, Catherine? I changed my
Is he allowed to change his mind?
I'm allowed to change my answer, aren't I?
Well, I don't know. It was exactly the logic I used.
Yeah.
I actually remembered the same thing.
Yeah, but she got it right, and you got it wrong.
Well, because I thought of it a little bit after I said
it.
I'm
sorry.
Catherine, I'm going with Catherine. I'm right on that one.
Okay. Catherine, did James Stewart study architecture at Princeton? Real or ridiculous?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
I'll say real.
Real? Curtis?
I'm going to go ridiculous.
Ridiculous?
I'm going ridiculous on that
one. It is real.
Ah, shoot.
Good job, Catherine. Carl, you are not doing well.
Gosh.
I jinxed you. And the third one. I got you. I feel better now. I was really stressed about this, Carl not getting any wrong, but now I can relax. Okay, Catherine, the Jimmy Stewart Museum is currently open in his hometown of Pennsylvania.
Oh, man.
What do you think, Catherine?
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous,
I'm
Curtis?
I'm talking to Curtis. Sorry.
Yeah, excuse me, Carl.
Sorry.
I'll go with real.
Real?
I'm going to go with ridiculous.
It's real. Carl,
hey!
It's real.
Oh. Wait, what did Catherine say?
She said it was real. She got all three right.
I wanted to go with
Catherine. And you got all three
wrong. I'm going with Catherine.
Okay, Catherine, you are the winner here.
Man.
No question about it.
I got all three wrong.
Carl got all three wrong, and I'm feeling good. Now
yourself.
I'm feeling good. Carl, you won the desktop indoor weather station. It's brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60-Minute Men. Give them a call at 855-955.
You know what it was?
He will not stop talking.
855-955-HVAC. Catherine, you know what it was? She brought Curtis into it, and that
Curtis, it's your fault.
Me
he
all
messed
up.
It all
it's
up.
All Curtis's fault.
I think because I told you earlier, Carl, that
she changed the dynamic of the whole thing.
You just proved my point that you were just going
right?
to. Catherine, you're the winner. Thank you so much for playing. Carl's going to go
minute.
Pout
I
for a little while.
I want a do-over. Catherine, call Wait. Back. I want a do-over.
Next hour, we'll give you another
all
chance.
Right, she did great.
You did great. Thank you again.
Man. You messed the whole dynamic up. That's
well,
what it was.
I'm so sorry. I really, really wanted you to win.
Oh, yeah, I know you did. All right, this is a newspaper drama, Big Town. And Edward G. Robinson starred as crusading newspaper editor Steve Wilson from 1937 until 1942. And Claire Trevor co-starred as society editor Lorelei Kilbourne for 1 year. Lorelei, that you don't hear that name anymore.
No.
Lorelei, it's not a name you hear anymore. Big Town, at its peak, was the highest-rated program on radio. You believe that? And then Edward Pauly and later Walter Grisa and Ona Munson played the roles. And then there was a TV version for a while. Well, we have a radio episode for you now starring Edward Pauly. It's called A Date with Death from January 18th, 1949. Here's part one now of Big Town.
Lever Brothers Company, makers of Lifebuoy Health Soap, present Big Town.
All right, get going, Wilson. Start walking across the lake. Step down on the ice.
Listen, chick. This ice won't hold the three of us.
This gun says get going, Wilson. Come on, by.
Break away from him, Miss Wilson.
You slug.
No, chick, no.
Yes, listen to A Date with Death. The headline newspaper story of Steve Wilson, fighting editor of the Big Town Illustrated Press. Listen to this timely story of juvenile delinquency that had its beginning on a drab street on the south side of Big Town, as a young girl unknowingly kept a date with death.
Chick. Chick, is that you?
Yeah, it's me, Vi. All right, hop in a heap, honey. We're gonna make a killing tonight.
No, wait a minute, Chick.
What for? You scared, baby?
Yes. But I need money, bad.
Who don't?
I mean, a lot of money to send Johnny away before he dies of that terrible cough.
Well, let's go and get it. I got three places cased for a sticker.
Where?
Well, the first is down on the waterfront. It'll be a cinch as a warmer upper.
All right. But, Chick, are you sure you can go through with it? Not lose your head?
Now, don't you worry, Vi, baby. I learned all the tricks of the trade and reform. And this gun will scare the dough out of the customers.
That's what I mean, Chick, that gun.
What about it?
I need money bad, but I don't want to be the cause of anyone getting hurt, killed. You promised you wouldn't load the gun.
Sure, I promise. And the rod's empty. All right, get in the car and get under the wheel. You're going to drive and leave the rest to me.
All right, but wait. Whose car is this?
I borrowed it.
You mean stole it?
Nah, some dope left his keys in it. We'll ditch it when we're done. The cops will find it and give it back to him in the morning.
But won't the police be looking for it?
Sure. In a couple of hours. But I switched the license plates. Will you quit worrying? I told you, I know all the tricks of the trade. Now get in, honey.
Bye. Violet.
Johnny.
Oh, wait a minute.
Johnny, get back in the house. You'll catch your death out here without a cold.
Well, that don't matter.
It does. You know what happens when you get a cold. Now, please go in.
No, I heard you talking. I know why you're gone out with this rat. I don't want that gun to help. I'd rather hack myself to death.
Now, don't be a dope, Johnny. You got a rotten break with them bum pair of lungs. We're going to get some dough so you can go where you can even the odds.
You shut up, Malone. Get out of here with that hot heap and leave my sister out of your crazy stick-up plans. Go on, beat it, you rat.
Right, cut it out, you dope. Get back in your basement or I'll slug you.
Please, Johnny. I know what I'm doing.
No, you don't.
Chicks promise nobody will get hurt.
That's what they all say. Every rat with a gun. You're not gone with them.
Please, Johnny, please go back in the house.
All right, get in the car, Vi. I'll take him back in the flat. Make him see it our way. Come on, Johnny boy.
Let go of me. Let go of my arm.
Please, Johnny, stay home. Wait for me.
No, Vi, don't get Johnny. In that car.
Oh. All right, Johnny boy. Now down the stairs into your clammy basement joint, and I'll show you how it's going to be.
Let go. You ain't dragging my sister into no jam. Reform school, prison. I'd rather die. I'd rather be dead.
Sure, now you just hold still. Now hold still, Johnny, till I get this door open.
I won't. I ain't going with you.
Hold still, you hear me? Now listen, you dope. I got us all planned. I need a dame to drive in front and cover for.
Not my sister. Not Vi.
Yes, Vi. And just to make sure you don't gum up the works, you're gonna stay right here till we get back.
Oh.
Okay, Vi, you stand at the wheel. Keep the motor going for a quick getaway.
But, Chick, why pick a waterfront joint like this Harbor Cafe?
Because it's usually deserted this early in the evening. And because a piano-thumping dope called Mozart runs it. He's alone after the dock workers go home, leaving a couple of $100 in the cash register.
Are you sure?
Sure, I'm sure. I told you, I cased this dump. This is just sort of practice for a couple of big jobs that get lined up in the suburbs for later tonight.
All right, but be careful, Chick. If he puts up a fight, let it go. Run for it. I'll get us away from here.
All right, Fry. You just stay under the wheel, huh? Keep the motor going. Keep the jalopy in gear for a getaway.
All right, Chick. I'll be waiting.
All right, just keep on playing, sucker. Make like I'm a music-loving customer. What'll you have, fella? Dough. All the dough in a till, and don't turn around.
There isn't enough dough in the world, much less in my cash register, to make me want to argue with a gun in my back.
Good. Go on, keep on beating out the blues.
Yeah, sure. How about the jailhouse blues?
All right, cut the musical wisecracks or I'll blast you for laughs.
Okay. But you'll need a sense of humor when you open that cash register behind the bar.
Yeah? How come? You taking plenty when the dockers bend a few on the way home?
Yeah, but I cash some of their paychecks, and you can't. Checks. That's all there is in the till.
You're a liar.
Liar? You're a dope.
Go on, keep playing. I'll sleep myself.
Sure, sure, but you scare me. Makes a guy's throat dry to have a gun jabbed in his back. Mind if I have a swing of suds out of that stein at the end of the keyboard?
Yeah, sure, go ahead. And then play me I Got Plenty of Plenty while I tip the till.
Sure. You're welcome to any cash you can find. But I don't like being called a liar.
You tricky slug. You slug. You blinded me with that beer mug. I can't see. I can't see.
Hi, Steve. Anything on the hook for your wondrous girl reporter?
Not a thing, Lorelei, at the moment. But come in, my lovely.
Thanks.
Perch on the corner of the desk of management and take my mind off this doggone paperwork.
Okay. But you could have stayed a reporter or feature writer, you know.
Oh, somebody's got to be the goat. Alias, managing editor.
Yeah, but you still jump every time a fire alarm goes in the city room, and then there's your anti-crime campaigns just to keep you from getting bored.
Yes, and not so incidentally, we're starting a new one against a different kind of criminal.
Oh?
A reckless driver. The killer at the wheel.
Good. Let me in on that one.
Okay, we're going to try a different approach. We're going after the driver who's had minor collisions, but has never had a serious accident.
There's sure plenty of those on the road.
Yes, and all the more dangerous, Lorelei, because he doesn't believe he's a reckless driver.
Uh-oh. The private wired your underwear listening post your own five alarm.
Yes, I'm expecting a tip on that South Side police killing. Hello, Steve Wilson, Illustrated Press.
Hi, Steve. Mozart. Got a minute for laugh?
Sure thing, Mozart. There was a matter. You sound kind of feeble.
Kind of feeble-minded, Steve.
Well, how so?
A punk kid tried to practice his stick-up technique on me and my cash register.
Now, hold up. What's happened?
Well, I told the kid there was no cash in the register, and he called me a liar. I cocked him with a beer stein, and he opened me up with lead.
Where'd he hit you, Mozart? Have you called a doctor and notified the police?
Through the shoulder, Steve, clean and hot as a poker. I lost some plasma the blood bank ought to have, but an ambulance intern just finished patching me up while I gave the law the lowdown on the kid.
You recognize him?
No, but I marked him up. Heard him say I blinded him.
Blinded him?
Yeah. Cops are on the prowl, but I think he got clean away in a car waiting outside.
Got any ideas we might follow up, Mozart?
Yeah, Steve, more than an idea.
Well, let's have it.
Well, another kid came in a few minutes ago.
Another kid?
Yeah, just after the cop and the ambulance left. Well, he says his sister may have been driving the getaway car.
A girl driver, good grief.
Well, the kid's lung sick and scared. Says his sister got mixed up with a rat to get money to send him away. He won't talk to the cops, Steve, but he might talk to you.
Keep him there, Mozart. I'll be right down on the double. You get that, Laura and I?
Yes, enough of it, Steve. Gee, it sounds awful.
Yes, the tragedy of good motives and bad methods.
Well, Steve, that girl may be in really serious trouble before this is finished.
Yes, let's go see what we can do.
Learning that his friend Mozart has been wounded in an attempted robbery at the Harbor Cafe, Steve and Lorelei Kilborn are on the way from the Illustrated Press office. Meanwhile, Mozart is at his inevitable piano, talking to a boy who may have vital information about the crime.
What's your last name, Johnny?
I won't tell you. You'll just tell the cops and they'll grab my sister for being with the rat who shot you.
Well, you'll have to know sooner or later, kid. And if she teamed up with that louse to get money to send you away to get rid of that cough, the judge will go easy.
Maybe. Who's this newspaper guy you say will help us?
Steve Wilson of the Illustrated Press. But, kid, nobody can help your sister if you don't come clean and tell us where we can find the gun-toting slug she was driving tonight.
Well, I don't know for sure.
Well, make a good guess, kid. Here's Steve and Miss Kilborn, one of his crime reporters. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Mozart.
Hello, Mozart.
Hi, Lorelei.
How's your shoulder wound?
Oh, not bad. I can play with one hand, but I can't manage beer at the same time. Oh, meet Johnny No Name.
Hello, Johnny. I'm so sorry your sister is mixed up in this mess.
Well, the rat promised Vi he wouldn't carry a loaded gun. I begged her not to go. I tried to stop her, but he slugged me.
Take it easy, Johnny. Let's have the facts, and perhaps we can help you and your sister.
Well, how do I know you won't go straight to the cops or print everything in your newspaper?
You don't, Johnny. And the police will have to know. But this isn't just a matter of keeping your sister out of trouble over an unsuccessful stick-up, Johnny.
Huh? What do you mean?
Look, Johnny, her companion may think he killed Mozart. Your sister would be a material witness. It's obvious she isn't a hardened criminal, and he may feel he has to shut her up to keep her quiet.
You mean kill her? Kill Vi?
Yes, why not? If he thinks he has killed one person, he would have nothing to lose in killing the one other person who could place him at the scene of the crime, Johnny.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
So who is this trigger-happy fool? Where can we find him, Johnny? What's his name?
His name is Jake Malone.
Malone.
He got out of reform school last month. I met him at a party. I don't know where he lives.
Where does he usually hang out, Johnny? Where would he go to keep undercover?
He said he was coming back to our flat, but they didn't come. I was waiting when I heard about the shooting down here over the radio.
I must have cut him up pretty bad with that beer stein, Steve. I heard him yell I'd blinded him after he hit me with that one shot and staggered out.
Well, that couldn't mean he'd have to make your sister drive him to a safe place where he could lay low until his face healed up. Now, think hard, Johnny. It may mean your sister's life.
I don't know. Oh, wait a minute, Mr. Wilson. I did hear him telling Vi about a cabin out of town.
A cabin out of town?
Yeah, on a lake.
What lake, Johnny? Think. Try to remember. That would be the kind of hideout he'd need now.
It was lost? No, long... Lone Lake.
Steve, I know that place. It's about 20 miles out. Half a dozen summer cottages. Two sisters were murdered there. I covered it.
Yes, it's a long shot, but our best bet.
Let me go with you, Mr. Wilson.
No, not in this weather. Not without a hat and coat.
Here, take mine, kid.
Oh, please, Mr. Wilson.
All right, Johnny. We may need you. Let's go.
Very dramatic organ music there, Lisa.
That's you, Carl. A dramatic. A dramatic
on this
person.
Big Town episode from 1949. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Telling you, Lisa, I would have gotten two right out of those instead of one right. If
I think
Curtis
is,
wasn't playing.
Yeah, it's Curtis's fault. I'm pretty sure
that dynamic just threw me.
I will tell you the reason you got them all wrong.
No,
all three
I
of
got
them.
One.
No, you got them all wrong.
I had.
That's
two
because
right.
You were bragging about how you never get any
probably.
Wrong. So that's
See,
how
that's
it
what
works.
I get for bragging.
Yeah,
no
taught yourself
bragging.
A lesson.
Shouldn't brag. Bragging is one of the seven deadly sins, isn't it?
I'm trying to tell
isn't
you.
Isn't it?
It
I
should
don't know
be
if,
it
if
it's
is,
not.
But if it's not, I'm going to. Maybe there should
maybe
be eight
you've learned
deadly
something.
Sins. There should be eight deadly sins.
I hope I taught you a lesson tonight.
Yeah, modesty is better than braggadociousness.
That's right.
Is that a word, dociousness?
I don't think so.
How many syllables is that? Braggadociousness.
Five.
It is five. How do you do that?
I think
Lisa?
Mary Poppins sang a song like that.
Braggadocious.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Hey, can you say that?
Braggadocious.
Hey, Roger, can you say supercalifragilisticexpialidocious backwards?
I used to be able to when the movie first came out.
I can.
Well, because you've been practicing.
I'm going to brag about it. I
know
can
you
do
are.
It.
And one of those deadly sins going to come
can
back
you do it,
and smack you.
Yes.
Docious ala expialistic fragicala super. I
and
did
what,
it.
What show
right.
are we listening to again?
Yeah.
The Three Stooges.
All right, well, we're listening to Big Town from 1949, A Date with Death. Here's the conclusion.
Where are we? What is this place, Chick?
Better be my pal Monk's hideout in Lone Lake if you drove where I told you.
I did just what you told me. Made every turn, and please let go of my arm and take that gun out of my side.
Not a chance, baby. Long as I can't see, I'm holding on to you. If you try to get away, I'll let you have it, same as I did that Mozart punk.
Why did you lie to me, Chick? You said that gun wasn't loaded.
Sure. I was sure you wouldn't come along if you knew I was carrying a loaded gun. I needed you to drive and make it look like we're a couple of moonspooners. Now I need you till I'm able to see again.
What's the good of coming to this cabin? You ought to see a doctor. You're liable to be blind for the rest of your life.
I'll get a doc when the heat's off, one I can trust. Meanwhile, you're going to be my eyes, baby. All right, now get out of the car. Let's get in the cabin and start a fire. Come on.
It's crazy, Tick. It's cold and dark, and we didn't bring any food.
There's cans of stuff in the cabin. Come on, lead the way. If you park where I told you, there's a path to the shack. It's right on the edge of the lake.
It's right over there. The lake looks frozen.
Yeah, this lake's right on the state line. Anybody trails us here, we can cross over the... Hey. We gotta be at the cabin by now.
It's right here. There's a padlock on the door.
All right, wait till I get the key. Don't try to run for it, baby.
Don't worry. I wouldn't leave a dog out here alone, blind and helpless as you are.
I ain't helpless as long as I got this gun. All right. Here's the key. Now get that lock open. Let's get inside and get a fire going.
All right. But, Chick, how do you know you killed that piano player at the Harbor Cafe? You said you couldn't see a thing after he hit you on the temple with that beer stein.
It was so close I couldn't have missed. Heard him go down on the keyboard, and there wasn't a yap out of him.
But maybe you only wounded him.
No, not with this .38. Come on, now, inside. There should be matches and candles on a table in the middle of the room. Light them.
Let go of my arm, Chick. I told you I won't run away and leave you like this.
I ain't trusting nobody with this gun. Keep close to me, baby. All right, light a candle.
All right, Chick. But a light can't matter much to you.
That's what you think. Maybe I'm beginning to be able to see a little already. I can't see you yet, but I can see the light of that candle.
Then it was only the shock of getting hit on the temple that blinded you.
Yeah, so get a fire going on the stove.
All right, Chick. But when you get your sight back, please let me go. I've got to get back to Johnny. He's really desperately ill.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Sure, baby. When I get my peepers back, I'll send you on your way.
Promise, Chick. Not the way you promised you wouldn't carry a loaded gun. Promise.
Yeah, yeah, sure, sure, Vi, I promise. You won't have a thing to worry about.
Say, boss, Miss Kilbine.
Say it, Harry, but watch for that sign pointing to the Lone Lake Cottages.
Oh, it ought to be right along here. I remember from the time I hacked you up here to cover that story of the two ladies who hacked each other up with hatchets.
Oh, I'd rather forget that assignment, wouldn't you, Steve?
Yes. One of those things that make you wish you'd never heard of the newspaper business.
How will we find the right cabin, Mr. Wilson? Chick Malone, they'd buy, drive him here.
Well, there are only half a dozen cabins, Johnny, on a road skirting the lake. If they're here, we'll spot the car near one of them.
Here it is, boss. Do we drive all the way in or park and walk?
Can you drive without lights, Harry?
Yeah, I think so. The fresh snow makes everything pretty light. Hey, tire tracks. A car has been in here since it stopped snowing.
That means tonight. Cut your lights and drive slowly, Harry.
The cabins are only a short way off the main road, Steve.
Yes, this is far enough. Stop here, Harry.
Jack, boss.
There's a cabin, Mr. Wilson. Over there in the woods on the left.
Yes. But no sign of a light.
I can see the lake through the trees on the right. Looks frozen over, boss.
Well, the ice can't be very solid, Harry. We haven't had enough cold weather.
Steve, over there, look.
Where, Lola?
The third cabin. I just saw sparks coming out of the chimney. There they are again.
You're right. That cabin is occupied, and the regular summer people don't come up here this time of year. Your guests may have been right, Johnny.
What are we going to do, Steve?
Harry?
Yep, boss.
There's a gas station on the main road about 100 yards from where we turned in.
Yeah, and it was open.
Run back there and phone the state troopers. Give them the whole story and ask them to send a patrol car here as quickly as possible.
Check, boss. And I'll ring the law in on this on a double-double.
What are we going to do, Steve? Just wait?
No. Stay here in the hack with Johnny, Lola. I'm going to go over to that cabin and scout around.
Let me go with you, Mr. Wilson. My sister...
No, Johnny. Stay in the hack. You keep as warm as you can. I'll come back and get you if I need your help.
Now, please be careful, Steve. That young hoodlum is armed, and he must be pretty desperate.
Yes, Lorelei, and that's why we've got to get Johnny's sister out of that cabin before the troopers have to blast him out with Tommy guns. Now, stay here, Lorelei, and keep Johnny here. In the hack.
What's that by?
Put down that gun, Chick. It's only the wind banging shut.
Shut up. Maybe, maybe not. Thought I heard a car out in the lane a while ago.
You've been hearing things ever since we got here.
Yeah. It's when a guy can't see, ain't got anything else to do but listen. Listen and feel things. I got a notion of somebody prowling around outside, a case in this dump.
What does it matter, Chick? The police followed us, they'll surround the cabin and get you. You're helpless. You can't see.
I can see enough to empty this rod on anybody that crashes in here.
Why? What good will that do?
Listen, if they're after me, it means that Mozart guy is dead. He ain't taking me to burn the chair.
He'll be after you whether Mozart is dead or not.
Listen, you got it wrong, baby. Not just me. He'll be after you and me. You're in this, baby. In it to the finish.
You lied to me. You said you wouldn't carry a gun. I know even that was wrong, but you lied to me.
Sure, baby, you were a dope. I needed you. And I still need you. So shut up and do as you're told.
Chick, you're going to kill me. I know that now. No matter what happens, you're going to kill me to keep me from talking.
Don't make up my mind for me ahead of time, baby. Behave yourself, you'll get it now. Shut up. There is somebody out there. Get your coat on, kid.
Why? What are you going to do?
We're going to get out of here.
Where?
Going to lamb across the lake, across the ice, out of the sea.
No, Chick, I won't leave here. I won't go with you.
Get your coat on, baby. Get it on or else.
Chick!
Shut up.
Hello, McCallum. Can I come in? I lost my way.
Chick, what are you going to do?
Open the door. Let him in.
Why get him in here?
So he ain't gonna leave and tell anybody we're here. Open the door. Let him in.
Let go of my arm.
It's like nothing. You pull away from me and I'll blast you and him. Now open that door and step back.
All right.
Come on in, mister.
Thanks. You can put away that gun. I'm not a stick-up artist.
Close the door and bolt it, mister.
Sure. Thanks for letting me come in. I was cold.
All right, mister. Who's with you?
I'm all alone. Why?
Good. Move over to the light where I can see you.
See you? There's plenty of light in this cabin. What's the matter with your eyes?
He can hardly see at all.
Shut up, baby.
Oh. Then you are his eyes, miss.
Yes, he's been hurt.
Shut up! Just keep your coat on, mister. You and Vi are going to play like a couple of seeing eye dogs. You're going to lead me over the ice. Across the lake.
Thus, Steve has deliberately walked into a deadly situation. And for the five-star payoff, we'll return in a moment. Lifebuoy, get skin cleaner.
Lifebuoy, get skin cleaner.
Lifebuoy, with its purifying ingredient, get skin cleaner. Stops B.O. as no other leading soap can. Here's what the doctors proved in 820 scientific tests.
People took daily baths with different soaps. Doctors compared the results. They found that Lifebuoy does more than just remove the grime and perspiration you can see. Lifebuoy is more effective than any other leading soap against the invisible dirt you never see. The cleaner you get your skin, the surer you are of being fresh and attractive. Doctors say that Lifebuoy's purifying ingredient makes the difference. And it makes Lifebuoy milder, too.
Yes, safe, even for babies' tender skin.
No wonder Lifebuoy today is used in the homes of 40 million Americans. They like its mildness, its rich lather, its greater protection. Lifebuoy, get skin cleaner.
Lifebuoy, get skin cleaner.
Lifebuoy, with its purifying ingredient, get skin cleaner. Stops B.O. as no other leading soap can. So bathe with Lifebuoy every day. Get the big new bath size.
Buy Lifebuoy right away. Now back to Big Town and to Steve Wilson's tense and timely drama of juvenile crime captioned A Date with Death.
All right, Wilson, so you're the racket-busting newspaper slug of the press.
Yes.
Plays palsy-walsy with the cops,
aren't
you?
That's right, Chick.
You called the troopers, huh? We ain't gonna be here, friend. Come on.
You'll never make it across the lake, Malone.
No, why not?
The ice is too thin to carry one person, let alone three, walking close together, as we must, if we're to lead you.
Give it up, Chick. Even if you got across the lake into another state, you're still so blind you can hardly see. You'll be helped.
Not as long as I get this gun to make you dopes do like I say. You're going to be my eyes till we get to some pals who'll hide me out. All right, come on. Get going. Out the front door and down to the lake. All right, open that door, Wilson.
All right, Chick. I'll lead you by the arm.
No, you don't, Wilson. Don't turn around. Just keep in front of me where I can keep this gun on your back.
Okay.
Come on, bye, baby. Try and break my hold on your arm and I'll plug Wilson. I'll walk down to the dock, Wilson. It's only a few feet from here.
We'll never make it across the lake. Give it up, Chick. We'll break through the ice. Drown.
Shut up. Come on. Come on. Try getting away from me and I'll let Wilson have it in the back.
All right, Chick. Here's the end of the dock. It's one step down to the ice. But it looks thin and cracked.
Try it. Put your weight on it.
Chick, it's your last chance to turn back. To hand over that gun, give yourself up, and take your chances with the law.
Nothing doing. Get going.
Don't, Chick. Mr. Wilson says you only wounded Mozart.
He's lying to save his own hide. Now get going, Wilson. Step down on the ice. Put your weight on it.
All right. Break away from him, Miss West.
You slut!
All right. That'll be all out of that gun.
Chick, help me. I can't see. I'll drown.
You won't drown in 3 feet of water. That's all there is. Stop struggling. Hold still.
Mr. Wilson, can I help you?
No, Miss West. I can get him up out of the shallow water onto the dock.
You rat! You slug, I'll get you for this.
It'll be a long time before you'll have a chance. Come on, Chick. Back to the cabin before we both freeze.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Wilson. I know I don't deserve your help after what I did, but thank you.
Now, let's leave that to a judge and jury, Miss West. I think that there are a great many things that will be taken into account.
Steve, is that you?
Yes, Lorelei. Oh. Where's Johnny?
He's with me. We heard a shot. I couldn't keep him in the hack.
Why are you okay?
Johnny! Oh, Johnny, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
It's all right, boy. As long as you're safe, it's all right.
Oh, Johnny, you shouldn't have come. You'll catch your death.
Johnny's going to be all right, Miss West. We're going to see that he gets to a place that'll fix him up. Come on now, let's get back to that cabin and wait for the troopers.
Steve, I think I hear them coming.
Yes. You hear that, Chick?
Yeah, I hear it.
I'm sorry. You'll have to relearn in prison the old, old lesson. That crime is a date with a kind of death.
And so ended with the rearrest and imprisonment of Chick Malone and a suspended sentence for Violet West. Another exciting assignment in the newspaper career of Steve Wilson and Lorelei of the Illustrated Press. Next week, the makers of Lifebuoy bring you a hard-hitting story of a vicious ring of professional gamblers using bribery and murder in the world of sports. And headlined, The Fatal Fix. Another exciting assignment in the newspaper career of fighting Steve Wilson of Big Town. Don't miss it. In tonight's dramatization, all names, times, and places are fictional. And any similarity to other names and places is purely coincidental. Big Town features Edward Pauley as Steve Wilson, Fran Carlin as Lorelei Kilbourne, and was written and produced by Jerry McGill. Next Tuesday night, same time, same station, you'll hear the exciting Big Town story of The Fatal Fix, presented by Lever Brothers Company. This is your narrator, Hugh James, bidding you good night.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's Big Town from January 18th, 1949, A Date with Death. And that stars Edward Pauly along with Fran Carlin. Mason Adams in that cast as well. Good NBC radio broadcast sponsored by your favorite soap, Lifebuoy Soap. You like Lifebuoy, right, Lisa?
Yeah.
You use Lifebuoy all the time.
That makes me smell fresh.
I think Lifebuoy's still around, isn't it? Lifebuoy soap? I mean, I remember using Lifebuoy soap. But
isn't that the... doesn't it float? Or no?
No, no. That's no. Dove was the one that floated, wasn't it? Dove?
No, I used
Or
Dove.
Ivory.
Ivory. Ivory, ivory to, floats.
Yeah. Lifebuoy... But
Lifebuoy actually is still around. I know a place where you can get it.
Yeah, where?
Yeah, where?
Well, it's...
in your bathroom?
No. there is a catalog, Vermont company, that sells some retro products.
Really?
What's
the name of the catalog?
Let me get you the exact name.
Is it like the Vermont Trading Company, something like that?
Let me get you the exact name.
All right.
All right. We get the catalog a lot. We've ordered stuff from there.
All right.
And, they do have that and, stuff like what's that shampoo? I can't believe.
Eat me spinach.
They've got Pro. They've got a whole. No. Never mind.
Do you
I'll
need
get
shampoo?
No.
All right. Well, we want to.
Just do a little.
I
want to
know what catalog it is. But first, these words. I still can't get over that tofu turkey you're going to have.
Tofurkey.
A tofu turkey.
Yeah, I am. And Carl, somebody texted, Carol texted in and said that it's called Vermont Country Store. So thank you.
And you can buy three
Carol.
Bars of Lifebuoy soap for $11.85.
Wow, that's not a bargain.
Three bars.
For $4 a bar?
Well, yeah, it's like not carried anywhere else, and it's an exclusive item.
Hmm. Yeah, it's way out of my price
very
point.
Exclusive.
Do they sell Roma wines in there for Lisa?
No, I haven't seen that,
then you wouldn't have to have that shipped in from Italy.
I was
going to
go with the wild root cream oil.
Yeah, I think they have that, too. They also have G, or hair smells terrific shampoo.
Well, I used to use that.
See? Told you that.
And short, I had like a long and silky and a short and sassy, all those products.
Yeah. Let's see. What else do they have? They have Lemon Up shampoo. Do you remember that
one?
What?
Nope. Lemon Up.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
That was from the 70s. Do you remember, Carl might, Jubilee Kitchen Wax.
No.
Carl didn't wax his floor too often.
No, this was actually, we used these on
wax
the appliances.
On, wax off.
We used these on the appliances in the laundry room. We used Jubilee wax when I was growing.
Jubilee?
Yeah.
Carl wasn't waxing his laundry room.
Yeah, Carl
he had
didn't
cleaning
have a
ladies
laundry room.
To take care of things.
Yeah.
Multiple ladies.
They have Turkish taffy. They have Mary Jane's.
Ah.
They have...
I knew a girl named Mary Jane once.
Yeah, there you go.
I knew a Turkish girl once.
Wow, she's getting in the swing of things.
I bet you can get Roma wines out of that Vermont country store.
Well, I think you should just purchase them and hide it under the desk here. Nobody will notice.
Autolite spark plugs.
Ooh, you know what
else
they got? You'll love this.
Wow.
They have the color forms.
Do you have a catalog
like
with
that.
You right now?
I'm looking
He's
at
online.
Online,
I assume.
Oh, online. Yeah. I'm like,
Carl doesn't
I have the catalog at home. I have the catalog at home because
Roger
they have
carries
some very
it with him wherever he goes.
I do, actually.
You know,
they have some classic Christmas ornaments
you know,
that you can't buy anymore.
I'm a big catalog guy. I mean, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I remember growing up and saying to my mom and dad, going through a catalog and going, can I get this toy for Christmas?
Mm-hmm. The answer is no.
Yeah. But that was part of growing up, a catalog.
Do you remember the FAO Schwartz catalog?
No.
Oh.
Mm-mm.
We only had the Sears and Ward.
Let me tell you, Lisa.
Neiman Marcus.
We didn't have any money growing up. That's why you had FAO Schwartz catalog.
Yeah.
She's
talking about the catalogs.
I mean,
she
Roger,
used to
wait
get.
A second. Lisa, I had Sears also.
Lisa was born into a good life.
Yes.
So she got the what is it? FSAO. What is it?
FAO Schwartz.
With the great big teddy bears.
That Roger, if that didn't
they're bringing it back. Did
okay,
you know
that's
they're
where they
the
have
New York
the
store?
Piano for the store big.
Roger,
yeah.
If that
right?
didn't just
yes.
reveal
uh-huh.
who she is.
Exactly.
Right there. She's like, oh, yeah. The I was like S&H green stamps. I was
exactly.
like saving my S&H green stamps.
Hey, Mom,
so
what
I can
we get with 30 books?
So I could get some licorice.
Okay,
you know?
I used to save those, too.
Yeah, right.
I did.
Uh-huh.
So we could buy toys.
Uh-huh.
I did.
Yeah.
They're like little green stamps with dinosaur on them.
That's why they're called green stamps.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Right? You just revealed to our listeners what it was like to be you as a kid.
Wow.
I'm not embarrassed
just
by
like,
that. Don't try to embarrass
like, Dad,
me.
Dad, could I have this this Rolls Royce car? It's only $180,000. Can I have that?
Oh, God.
And there's, yeah, okay, if you're good.
I was good.
If you're good, you'll get that. What color would you like?
Well, I'd like two.
What color would you like?
I'd like purple.
Purple. The purple Rolls Royce. That's a common color.
Maybe. All right. When we come back from the news, it's David Harding, Counter Spy from 1951.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. It is 8 minutes after 1 in the morning. Thanks, Roger. It is... the third hour of our program. Thanks for staying up late with us. When we come back tonight at 11 p.m., we will have...
Fibber McGee and Molly and the First Nighter program.
Yeah, good comedy and a good drama. That's tonight at 11. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. on Saturdays and until 1 a.m. on Sundays.
And so bring your pillow and your sleeping bag because we might just get snowed in here tomorrow night.
Oh, no. Not with my Jeep. Don't worry about it.
Well, I'm not as worried about your Jeep as all the cars around your Jeep.
Nah, go right around them. No
okay,
problem.
Well, this should be fun.
Four-wheel drive.
So remember when you said I was becoming a good passenger?
Yeah.
You might eat those words tomorrow or tonight.
All right. In this hour, David Harding, Counter Spy from 1951. But first, we're going to play our game, Cat's Pride, Real or Ridiculous. Who is the celebrity?
Dustin Hoffman.
Okay.
One of my favorites. And the winner will get a Never Measure.
Oh, I want a
Never know.
Measure.
It's a great tool.
Yeah, I want
it's really
one of
handy.
Those. All right, 312-981-7200. Which caller?
Caller 5.
Caller 5. 312-981-7200. Call us now. We'll play the game live on the air after these words.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous. Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
We have Bob on the phone. Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Glad you made it through. Hi, caller Bob. Number 5. We're going to do a little Dustin Hoffman this morning, okay?
Okay.
All right. I hear that. Yeah. All right. That's better. Okay. Number 1. Dustin Hoffman based his performance in Rain Man on a patient he worked with when he was a nursing aide. What do you think? Real or ridiculous?
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous, Carl?
Yeah, ridiculous.
I'm sorry, you're both incorrect. That is absolutely real. Carl,
what?
Your streak lives.
I was going to pull a Carl and say real, but since nobody asked.
sorry. Okay, number 2. Dustin Hoffman worked in the toy department of Macy's. What do you think, Bob?
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Carl?
Yeah, ridiculous.
It's real again. Those are both true facts of Dustin Hoffman. See how much you're learning this morning? Okay, Bob. In 2018, Dustin Hoffman reached 1 million followers on Twitter.
Real.
Carl.
Yeah, that sounds real.
And that one is ridiculous.
I was going to say that. He's not on Twitter.
He's not on Twitter is right. He's 81, by the way. But congratulations, no matter whether you get him all right or all wrong, Bob, you're the winner. And don't listen to Carl. His streak is not doing well. You have won a Never Measure. You could easily center, level, and hang your wall decorations fast and eliminate the need to use a measuring tape or calculate fractions. It is veteran-owned, made in the USA. Get yours at NeverMeasure.com. Congratulations, Bob. It is a great and handy tool. I have one. I use it all the time. You will love it.
All right.
Terrific. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. All right. Got all 3 of them wrong.
Yeah. Great. Oh, and the last one, too, for James Stewart. So you're doing really well tonight.
Yeah. Gosh, I'm off. There's something not right.
There is something not right. All right.
You're just realizing that now? Okay.
There's something not right. I'm glad you said it.
You know what? There's something right with David Harding, Counter Spy.
There you go.
Because this espionage drama came to radio in 1942, lasted until 1957. Don McLaughlin, and we have a picture of Don McLaughlin up on our Facebook page, played David Harding, chief of the United States Counter Spies. This was a fictional unit engaged during World War II in counterintelligence against Japan and Germany. This was made up by the producer, Phillips H. Lord. It wasn't really a government agency, but it was great for the radio show, right? Counter Spies. Mandel Kramer played Harry Peters. That was Harding's assistant. And during World War II, the plots revolved around threats from Axis powers. And then after the war ended, Cold War threats took precedence, and later they addressed all manner of illegal activities. There were two Columbia films made about this series in 1950, and Howard St. John starred in the title role. It never made a transition to television, but we have a radio broadcast for you now from January 7th, 1951. This is called The Case of the Kleptomaniac Clues, and it stars Don McLaughlin. Here's part one of David Harding, Counter Spy.
By transcription, the National Broadcasting Company presents Counter Spy.
Washington calling David Harding, Counter Spy. Washington calling David Harding, Counter Spy.
Harding, Counter Spy, calling Washington. United States Counter Spies, especially appointed to investigate and combat the enemies of our country, both at home and abroad. These Counter Spy reports to the American people are brought to you each week at this time. Now, The Case of the Kleptomaniac Clues.
Going on a little trip, Mr. Trafford?
What the...
I wanted to see you before you left Frisco.
Hey, who are you? And how did you get into my hotel room?
What's the difference? I'll call the manager and have you...
Drop that phone, Trafford.
That's better.
What is this? What's that gun for? What do you want?
That briefcase you're carrying?
What?
The briefcase. Hand it over and you won't get hurt.
I'll do no such thing.
Give me that.
You won't get away with this.
Shut up. Sit down in that chair. We'll just tie you up so you won't make no fuss while I'm blowing out of here.
Just why? Why are you doing this? Just why?
For dough. What else? I don't know what's inside this thing, but certain people are willing to pay plenty to find out.
Well, Mitchell,
You
glad to be back in San Francisco again? Or is that a foolish question?
In view of being met at the boat by you, love, let's say it's a superfluous one.
Darling, always the appropriate sentiment.
Well, the Orient has its fascination, Elise. But it does not have you.
I hope it was dull, of course.
Oh, business was quite good, but nothing else. And speaking of business, how is our little curio shop with its clocks, knickknacks, and whatnot?
Excellent, darling.
Good.
I'm expecting a rather interesting shipment soon.
Oh? Will that mean another seagoing excursion for me?
It could. Perhaps I'll go with you this time. Would you like that?
I refuse to answer a question like that. Its intent is much too obvious.
Ah, darling. Oh, here we are.
Here you are, driver. Keep the change.
I left Doreen in charge of the shop.
Oh, how is she?
As usual. She handles the carriage trade exceedingly well.
Uh-huh.
At times I think you're a bit too interested in her.
What? Oh, nonsense, Elise. Why, she's hardly more than a child.
Yes, I know that, but you?
Oh, Miss Monroe, you're back.
Well, hello, Doreen.
How are you, Mr. Monroe? Nice to see you back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back. How have you been?
Just fine, thank you. Was your trip successful?
Mm-hmm, very.
I'm glad.
Doreen, were there any messages while I was gone?
No, Miss Pomeroy, but there's a man waiting to see you in your office.
A man?
Mr. Omack. A very curious thing happened.
Curious?
Yes. I could have sworn he deliberately put one of our teakwood figures in his pocket.
What?
And as though he realized I'd seen him, he put it back on the display shelf. But perhaps it was a mistake.
Perhaps. Come along to the office, Mitchell. Mr. Omack may be a buyer.
Yes. Or a seller. See you later, Doreen. A lovely girl.
If one likes the type.
Always waiting for somebody, that's me.
I don't like you sitting behind my desk, O'Mac.
Oh, excuse me. I hope I didn't soil nothing.
You have what you were sent to get?
You mean Mr. Trafford's briefcase?
You know that's what I mean. Do you have it?
Yeah, I got it.
Give it to me.
Not so fast.
Well, what is it?
There's been a change made since I first talked to you.
Change? What do you mean?
The price you're paying. I don't like it.
Oh, you don't?
No, I don't. So you'll have to make it fatter.
Tell me, love. Where'd you find this cheap highwayman?
Never mind that now. Omak, we agreed on $10,000.
Yeah, well, I need 10 more.
You deceitful pig.
You know how it is. Cost of living going up and all.
I won't hear this kind of street corner conniving.
Okay, okay, suit yourself.
And may I ask just what will happen if you don't get what you want?
The counter spies would love to get their hands on the little setup you've got here.
What?
You've got till tomorrow to pay my price.
You wouldn't go to the counter spies.
Huh? Try me and find out.
David Harding, counter spy headquarters, Washington. To San Francisco field office. Special directive to Agent Carl Braden. Re, Mr. George Trafford. Proceed on description of man who stole briefcase and on any other information Trafford can supply. I'm leaving by jet immediately. Have correlation of data ready for my inspection upon arrival. End of message. Oh, Miss Johnson, have you contacted Agent Peters in the St. Louis field office yet?
He's on the wire now, sir. Line number 3.
Oh, good. Hello. Hello, Peters.
How are you, Mr. Harding?
Peters, I'm leaving Washington by jet for San Francisco within the hour. I'm picking you up en route, so gauge your time carefully.
Right, what's up?
No time now. I'll fill you in later.
Okay, Chief. I'll be standing by at the St. Louis airport.
And preparatory to leaving San Francisco, Trafford stopped to rest at a hotel until his train was due to depart for Washington.
I follow most of it up to now, Mr. Harding, but...
But what, Peters?
Well, who is Trafford? And just what was in this popular briefcase of his?
Well, Trafford is in no official capacity with the government, Peters. He's merely a private citizen who happens to be an astute industrial organizer.
Sort of an efficiency expert, hmm?
Yes, you could call it that.
And the big top secret in that briefcase?
A draft of plans for mobilization of certain key industries. Plans, factory locations, working schedules, objectives, probable results, so forth.
I see.
Which, of course, was intended for the hands and eyes only of the defense coordinator in D.C.
I wonder in whose hands and under what eyes they are now at this very moment.
That's what we've got to find out, Peters. And fast.
Hello?
Omak, this is Elise Pomeroy.
I was expecting your call.
Quite sure of yourself, aren't you?
Yeah. And I'm even more sure of you.
You still demand 10,000 more?
That's right.
I was thinking of a counter offer. Shall we say 7,500?
You know, I can't hear a word you're saying.
8,000.
I still can't hear you. So long, Miss Pomeroy.
Wait.
My price stands at 20,000. You can't auction with me. 20,000, or like I said, the briefcase goes to the counter spies.
All right. Very well. You shall have your money.
I wasn't worried for a second. Love.
Don't be insolent.
Why not? I can afford it.
I'll have the money for you at 11 o'clock tonight.
Where do I pick it up?
My home. 245 Ridgewood Drive.
Ridgewood Drive. Okay, love. I'll be there.
Drink, Mitchell.
Oh, and just right. Thank you, love. To your very good health, Elise.
And to yours.
May you always feel as wonderful as you look.
And may you always be as truthful as you sound.
So much for that. Why did you ask Omak to come here to your house, Elise?
I don't want him seen near the shop again. It's much too risky, darling.
Quite a fellow, isn't he? Or should I say felon?
He's been useful.
Let's see now. Within the short space of 24 hours, he's committed a holdup, blackmail, and incidentally gave way to a touch of kleptomania. Very impressive.
Kleptomania?
Of course, yesterday in the shop. You heard Doreen describe his attempt to palm a teakwood piece just before we arrived?
Perhaps she made it up.
Oh, come now, my dear. Does it sound so incredible, considering what Omak is?
Besides, why would Doreen make up a thing like that?
I wouldn't know, would you?
No. And, by the way, she knows nothing about business transactions in the Orient, does she?
No. And the less she knows about anything concerning us, the better.
Why, Elise, I would almost think you're jealous of Doreen from your tone of voice.
Would you now?
Yes, but you've no reason to be. Look,
that must be Omac. I'll let him in. Come in.
Thank you. Well, say, quite a joint you got here. A little far from town, though, ain't it?
Do you have the briefcase?
You're looking at it. Hi, Jack.
If you're talking to me, begin again. I'll leave Jack out of it this time.
Take it easy, Governor. Just being friendly.
I'll take the briefcase if you don't mind.
First, my payoff if you don't mind.
Just as you say. I'll get it from my desk.
You mind if I have a drink? See, got a few spread around here.
Take mine if you like. I haven't touched it.
Well, thank you. And believe me, I wouldn't mind if you did. Love.
Now, see here, O'Mac.
Disregard him, Mitchell.
Sure, Monroe. Do that. After tonight, you two won't be bothered with me anymore. Well, here's to the end of a beautiful friendship, huh?
Something wrong, O'Mac?
This drink.
Now, look at the mess you've made.
You put something in the drink.
Only a drug. A very quick, effective, and deadly poison.
I'll kill you.
A very quick poison, O'Mac. Even quicker when you expend energy unnecessarily.
I'll get you.
The end of a beautiful friendship, exactly as he said.
Elise.
I should have let you in on my little plan, I suppose.
Well, I didn't expect anything like this.
Don't be so shocked, darling. After all, you realize you can't trust a blackmailer. He would have eventually given us away, you know.
You really do mean business, don't you?
Yes, Mitchell, I really do. Now let's get rid of him.
Well, that's about the size of it, Mr. Harding, and I have no idea how he got into that hotel room.
Or who could have sent him, Mr. Travin?
No, I'm afraid not. My completion of the draft, as well as my trip to the Capitol, was strictly secret, as far as I know.
But you'll be able to identify this man when we pick him up.
Oh, absolutely, Mr. Peters.
Mr. Harding, isn't it possible that he's passed the plans to another party by now?
Yes, more than likely.
Can't a new draft of your survey be substituted?
Oh, yes, certainly. With putting in another 7 or 8 months on relocations and shifting schedules, it's not the happiest situation, I can tell you.
And time's important.
So it's a question of retrieving what we have or substituting a plan which, at best, will be inferior to the original.
Well, we can't risk the operation of your plan, Mr. Trafford, as long as there's a chance of its being known to unfriendly powers.
Then you've got to get it back to me, sir, before it's somehow shipped out of the country.
We'll try, Mr. Trafford. You can be sure of that. We're going to try every way possible.
You can be sure of that, Lisa. They're going to try every way possible on this show. David Harding, counter spy from 1951, The Case of the Kleptomaniac Clues, starring Don McLaughlin. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Okay, when we come back here at 11, it is Fibber, McGee, and Molly. And the first Nighter program. I'm going to have two more classic radio shows for you at 11 p.m. So make sure you mark your calendar for that. We're here every Saturday and Sunday, beginning at 11 p.m. Lisa Wolf and I playing all your favorite classic radio shows here. And I think this is our fourth year, and I believe by April, I think we'll be going into our fifth year. I'm pretty sure, Lisa.
That sounds right.
Yeah, pretty
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, we're in our fourth year.
Yeah, very cool. It's a lot of fun doing this.
Yeah.
Love playing these classic radio shows from my library. And Mike Estella, our executive producer, does amazing, amazing work making these shows sound as good as they do. Of course, we start with the master recordings, but then Mike takes those shows and he just makes them sound all the better. And we're listening to a very good quality show right now. David Harding, Counter Spy. Let's get back to it right now.
Well, hello, Doreen.
Oh, Mr. Monroe.
Oh, I didn't expect to find you in Elise's office.
I was just filing some invoices. Miss Pomeroy should be back shortly.
Good. We can wait together, hmm?
Of course, Mr. Monroe.
Oh, no. My name is Mitchell.
Miss Pomeroy might not like me to call you that.
Oh, Miss Pomeroy isn't here. My friends call me by my first name. I consider you a friend.
Do you?
Yes.
I'm glad. I've always been afraid she might misunderstand.
Elise? Oh, not at all. What is there to misunderstand?
Well...
Doreen, do you like me?
Yes. Yes, I do.
I like you, too.
Will you be going away soon?
Yes, I'm afraid so. Within a few days.
I'm sorry.
Are you?
Yes.
I'll be back, though.
Will you?
Mm-hmm. But until I...
Hope I'm not interrupting anything.
Hello, Elise. I've been waiting for you.
Not expecting me quite so soon.
Well, as a matter of fact, I was getting a bit impatient.
I'm glad you were able to find a way of containing your impatience. Doreen, you better get out front in the shop.
Yes, Miss Butler.
Before you go, Doreen.
Yes?
I want you to remember something.
What is it?
This. Now, go about your business. And remember that.
I'll be sure to remember it, Miss Pomeroy.
Why did you do that?
You know, without being told, so we won't discuss it.
For heaven's sake, at least behave sensibly.
Be quiet. You and your affairs are unimportant at the moment. I've had the plan we stole from Trafford microfilmed. You'll leave with it on the first boat out of San Francisco for Hong Kong.
When is that?
Tomorrow night.
Are you coming along with
me? No. Because everything we do from now on will be done on a strictly business basis.
Really?
Yes. So mind your step, lover. You know the way I do business.
You are listening to the case of the kleptomaniac Clues on Counter Spy. There's a big evening's entertainment with the Chimes today and every Sunday over most of these same NBC stations. The Big Show brings you 90 minutes of the very best in comedy, music, and drama with Tallulah, the distaff dynamo, and the leading personalities of show business. The Phil Harris Alice Faye Show means 30 mad and delightful minutes with the unconventional Harrises and their friends. Hedda Hopper brings you dramatized stories of Broadway and Hollywood. Tales of the Texas Rangers stars Joel McRae in an authentic drama from the files of the nation's oldest police force. And genial Jack Parr quizzes a group of courageous contestants on the $64 question. Remember, the Chimes are your invitation. Now, back to Counter Spy.
Agent Braden to Harding, San Francisco field office. Braden to Harding.
Harding, go ahead, Braden.
The body of a man fitting description furnished by Mr. Trafford was found on the outskirts of the city. Death by poisoning. Identification, Charles Omack. He is now at the city morgue.
All right, no further instructions, Braden.
Yes, Chief.
Pick up Mr. Trafford, Peters, and meet me at the city morgue. A dead man just turned up who may be the one. We'll need Trafford to identify him. Yes. Yes, that's him. That's the man who took my briefcase.
You're certain, Mr. Trafford?
Absolutely. His driver's license said that Charles Omack. That name mean anything to you?
No, nothing.
They found this in his pocket, Mr. Harding.
Oh, I see that there. Hmm. Teak wood. Little teak wood figure.
Odd thing for a guy who was also carrying a .38.
Yeah.
Mr. Harding, will you need me any further?
Oh, not at the moment, Mr. Trevin.
Then I'll leave if you don't mind. I don't care for the atmosphere of a morgue very much.
No, nor do we. Come on, Peter.
Any place special, Chief?
Yes. Very special, I think.
I'd like to help you, Mr. Harding, of course, but I don't see how I can.
Well, this man Omack was carrying in his pocket a small teakwood figure on the base of which was the name of your shop, Miss Pomeroy.
Well, that's strange, I'll admit, but I'm at a total loss to explain it.
You're quite sure that you've never heard the name Charles Omack?
I'm sure I'd remember if I had.
Would you have any record of sale on such an item?
Hardly. Not a terribly expensive piece. That one sells for $2. And as you can see, I have many more of the same type on display here in my shop.
Yes, I see.
Oh,
hello, Mitchell.
Hello, Elise.
This is my business associate, Mr. Monroe. Mitchell, this is Mr. Harding and Mr. Peters of the United States Counterspies.
Gentlemen, how do you do?
How are you?
They seem to think that we might have information concerning a man named Omack, who was killed recently.
Omack?
Ever hear the name, Mr. Monroe?
No, I don't believe I have.
Well, we'll bother you no further at the moment. Should anything of importance occur to you, you'll contact us, of course.
Of course.
Goodbye. Thank you very much.
Hello? That dame is quite a number, huh, Chief?
Maybe a wrong number. Get a stakeout on this shop, Peters.
You think they're lying?
That's what we've got to find out, for sure. Harding speaking.
Mr. Harding, this is Doreen Bridgeton.
Yes?
I work in Miss Pomeroy's shop. I was there this afternoon when you were questioning her.
Let's go on.
I remained out of sight, but I could hear everything that was said.
I see. Go ahead, Miss Bridgeton.
She lied to you. She did know a man named O'Mac. He was in the shop the day before yesterday.
Will you swear to that in court? Should we call upon you?
I'll be happy to, Mr. Harding. Most happy to.
Well, where can you be reached? Hello? Hello? Yes?
Peters, I'm fine, Mr. Harding.
Thank you. Go ahead, Peters.
Dave, I have that stakeout on the curio shop, and I personally tailed Monroe.
What did you find out?
He picked up a steamship ticket for the Tregania, leaving for Hong Kong tomorrow night. I checked with the clerk.
Any report on the shop itself?
No, not yet. What do we do about Monroe? Stop him?
Yes, but not officially. If he's a decoy and not carrying the papers, I don't want a false arrest charge. That'd tip our hand completely. We've got to stall him without him knowing we've done it.
How?
Well, a call to the customs department ought to do the trick. Now, in the meantime, put a surveillance squad on a girl named Doreen Bridgeton. She works for Elise Pomeroy. She may not realize it, but Miss Bridgeton is a sitting duck right this minute. I'll come in, Peter.
I got a check-in from Braden, Mr. Harding. Monroe's gone to the dock.
Good. I expect a call from customs on that any minute. Now, you have a man watching Doreen Bridgeton's apartment, huh?
Since last night.
Good. Oh, this is it.
We hope.
Harding. Yes. Oh, fine. Fine. No, nothing else. And thank you very much. All right, goodbye.
What, Chief?
The customs people wound Mr. Monroe in red tape, the details of which I'll spare you, and revoked his passport temporarily.
Which means he won't sail tonight.
Or any other night. Now, we've got to move fast. First, we'll have the Bridgeton girl picked up. We'll need her later. Then, we'll see what the deluxe quarters aboard a luxury liner look like, Peters.
Yeah, I like that part.
Don't pack, though. We're traveling light.
Hello, Elise.
What are you doing here? Why aren't you aboard ship?
It seems the best laid schemes of mice and men...
Will you make sense?
All right, my passport's been revoked. I can't sail.
What?
I think I speak distinctly.
How did that happen?
I don't know. Some sort of a mix-up on dates.
Oh, you are an idiot. This changes everything. Give me your ticket.
Huh? Ticket?
You still have that, don't you?
Yes.
Well, give it to me.
All right. Well, what are you going to do?
I have an hour and a half to make the boat. I'll sail in your place. Where's the microfilm?
My wristwatch case.
Well, give it to me.
Huh? Here, take it.
I've got to rush. At least my passport's in order.
Now, listen, you can't leave me here holding the bag, my sweet. I won't take it.
Oh, do be still. You're such a bore.
A bore, is it? We'll see how boring I am. I'd like you to put me through to the United States counter-spies. Yes, please, and hurry. Counter-spy field office, my name is Mitchell Monroe. I'm...
We should be at the dock in a few minutes, Mr. Harding. Hope our suspect doesn't miss the boat.
We'll ask the captain to postpone sailing time if necessary. But I don't think it will be.
Agent Braden to David Harding in control, car S1.
Harding, come in, Braden.
Mitchell Monroe was shot and killed about 15 minutes ago while attempting to call our field office from a pay station.
How did you check it that quickly, Braden?
The receiver was off the hook. We got a police report on it within a few minutes after.
All right, Braden, no instructions.
Little Elise is going to have plenty to answer for, Chief.
Let's get to that boat, Peters. Step on it. What time is it, Peters?
20 minutes to midnight and it's sailing time, too. I wish something would break, Chief.
It will. Don't worry.
I'm getting a little too accustomed to the grandeur of this deck cabin. Kind of tempts me to chuck everything and go for a little cruise myself.
Well, Miss Pomeroy.
Mr. Harding.
Come in, Miss Pomeroy.
What are you doing here?
We asked the same of you.
Just how dare you ask me anything? What right have you to be in my cabin?
We thought it was Mr. Monroe's cabin. It's in his name.
What of it?
He had passport trouble. But nothing that wouldn't clear up in a day or so. He'd have been able to sail. It must be urgent business that prompts you to so hurriedly take his place.
I want you to leave immediately.
When we leave, lady, you're leaving with us.
On what charge?
Treason for one.
Murder for another.
Ridiculous.
I think we'll be able to make it stick, Miss Pomeroy. I'm sure that a thorough search of your belongings will reveal the presence of certain top-secret plans for wartime mobilization of industry in this country.
You're mad.
Probably on microfilm. And added to that, we have the eyewitness testimony of Doreen Bridgeton that you knew Charles Omack, knew him well.
She's lying. She's trying to get even for a personal difference.
You know Mitchell Monroe is dead?
What?
Murdered?
No. No, I didn't know.
You're almost convincing.
He's probably telling the truth, Peters. I don't think she'd have had time to kill Monroe.
You're going to arrest me, then do so, and let's get off this boat.
Not so fast, Miss Pomeroy. There's more where you came from, so let's just wait here for a few minutes and see who it is.
What do you mean?
I'm sure you know exactly what I mean.
Elise, do you...
Well, come in, Mr. Trafford.
Hey, what is it, Harding?
Don't you know?
Oh, I certainly don't.
Then I'll tell you. You had yourself robbed of your own plans.
Robbed? What are you talking...
Omack didn't know you. Miss Pomeroy did the hiring and carefully pointed you out. A perfect way of deflecting any and all suspicion from yourself.
Why, that's absolutely ridiculous.
You had a neat setup for an espionage agent, Trafford. You enjoyed the confidence of high government officials while you were planning to transmit your industrialization plans to an unfriendly power.
You don't know what you're saying. Neither one of you do.
But you made one small slip. According to the desk clerk of the hotel here in San Francisco, it was 2 o'clock when you checked in.
They won't listen to this.
You'd better listen, Trafford, and close, because the United States attorney is going to ask you questions later.
When you arrived at the hotel, there was a southbound train leaving San Francisco at that very moment. So there was no reason for you to have been anywhere but on that train. No reason but your own personal one.
Harding, you're making a grave error.
The error is all yours, Trafford, for showing up here in Miss Pomeroy's cabin.
What's the angle for your coming, Trafford? Skipping? Or just to give her some last-minute instructions?
It couldn't have concerned the microfilm plans. You have your own copies, I'm sure.
Now, don't move, any of you.
Is that the gun that killed Monroe? A ballistics test should tell.
There won't be any test.
I don't know about that. My agents have the dock area completely surrounded. They let you in, but they're sure not to let you out, except with me.
I'm willing to run the risk. Now stay right where you are.
Don't leave me, George.
Sorry, Elise. I have to travel light now. I'm sorry.
You're no good!
Come on, Peters. There he is, Chief. Stop or I'll shoot, Trafford. He's headed for the rail. Stop, Trafford. Stop or we'll fire. Let him have it. He's falling overboard. He's finished, Chief.
Yes, but Miss Pomeroy isn't. Not yet. She'll stand trial and pay the penalty all traitors eventually pay.
Tune in every week, same time, same station, to Counter Spy. Listen next week for the exciting Case of the Captured Contact.
When a famous lecturer canceled his tour, a solicitous friend canceled his life by murder. How a weak eye and a strong arm led your counter spies into a most intriguing adventure will be unfolded next week in
Case of the Captured Contact on Counter Spy. Tonight's Counter Spy program originated in New York, was directed by Marks B. Loeb, dramatized by Edward J. Adamson, and featured Don McLaughlin and Mandel Kramer. Lionel Rico speaking. Counter Spy is a Phillips H. Lord production. The preceding transcribed. Three chimes mean good times on NBC.
There you have David Harding, Counter Spy, January 7th, 1951, The Case of the Kleptomaniac Clues, starring Don McLaughlin. Also, you had Mandel Kramer in that cast, heard on NBC.